Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Glazers, marketers of fine wines and spirits, and from the best chocolate in town, purveyors of fine chocolate and desserts located on Mass Ave. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Well, if you're like me, December is racing past you. You know, I've never been a shop early kind of person. I remember shuffling zombie-like through Toys R Us in the late nights leading up to Christmas when the kids were little. And really, I haven't gotten any better about getting my shopping done early since then. But this year, at least, I've got some ideas. We talked with several local food artisans and shop owners for last week's show, and I've even got a couple more holiday interviews for this week. We'll be talking with candy maker Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections, Chef Carlos Salazar and restaurateur Ed Rudisill of Rook, Ashley Walden of Naptown Etching's personal and custom line of local gifts, and Nick Carter and Tyson Peterson of the new Spoke and Steel restaurant in downtown Indianapolis. And we'll also hear from Brennan Corder of Crown Liquors about an upcoming whiskey tasting. So stay with us here on eDrink Indiana Radio. Well, Christmas is coming, of course, and we're all gearing up for the holidays. But some companies, like candy makers, do the bulk of their business in December. So what's it like for a candy maker at Christmas time? That's what I wanted to find out when I stopped in recently at the production kitchen of Newfangled Confections, where owner Carrie Abbott makes her signature friddle candy and other tasty treats. So we're right here where the magic happens, right? That's so tell me what you're doing.
I am making friddle candy. Yeah.
And what all does that entail? You have all sorts of things, and I'm standing here in the way.
Yeah, that's okay. Right now during this season, we make friddle and other candy every day, all day. And right now you are standing in the kitchen burning hot candy around you. But yeah, it is a choreographed dance. We were talking about this the other day, and we know like who is where things are hot, who's turning, and very minimal communication. I know you've been in a lot of kitchens where people give you the temperature and direction, which way they're headed. And so we do a lot of that here.
So now tell me again, for people who aren't familiar with friddle, tell me what it is and what's in it, that sort of thing.
Basic ingredients, it's sugar and a touch of corn syrup for texture for candy. And instead of finishing it with peanuts, like brittle, and a little bit of butter, we actually finish it with some peanut butter. And it is a softer version of brittle.
Now, has that become the main thing that you do? But I think you've added other things to the product line, right?
Yeah, that's right. So friddle is the original candy. We did that pretty much straight for about a year and a half when we were starting out, me and Jana over there. And then we were able to add southern pralines, as they say, for some of the Yatz restaurants. And then we still make those. Those are delicious. Very sweet confection. Cajun Creole confection. And then we also added sweet and spicy pecans. As you see, I can't stop moving because candy waits on nobody.
Well, that's fine. So right now, you're cutting out the pieces of what's going to be friddle. Now tell me how long you've been at this and how it started.
Well, in the food service I've been in for... for a few years. In candy making, this is the end of our third season. So we really still consider ourselves a brand new, young company, still learning some, lots of major, what's the word I'm looking for? Learning a lot of lessons along the way, some even today. But just always love food service, always love being in the kitchen, and each job or each career, each business just somehow naturally leads into the next.
So are you very scientific about your methods?
Definitely in candy, you have to be. And it's really not a joke about the humidity thing. If it's, if we're even just washing dishes a lot, or we've got some you know, sweet and spicy pecans going on in the oven, and there's some moisture coming off the butter and the brown sugar mix, plus dishes, plus nonstop frittle. It just gets tacky on top, and it takes a little while to dry out.
So that actually makes a difference? I mean, even as something like washing dishes a lot in the same room can make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, and I think I've mentioned this before with you, that I really do try to break a recipe. So you get a recipe, it's good, it's really not good enough to do it a dozen times. You need it to turn out the same hundreds of times, thousands of times. So you think, like, how much of this one ingredient, how much of this heat, how much of this humidity, until it's like, I got it, I don't got it. And then you just lose, you know, the texture, or you lose being able to count on it to be the same every time. And so I'm not saying, like, you can't do one load of dishes or, you know, one load of that. It's just when it's really, really busy right now, those things do matter. And it, you know, winter even, there's a lot of humidity still, a little bit of rain or snow or ice. But summer is really a killer on us. So we don't do a ton. And it's not an emergency candy season. There's no emergency orders. So summer, we're able to, you know, work on other things, keep our wholesalers happy, maybe design some new candies. It's the end of our third year, and, you know, we're up to a whopping 4 candies. But we know all the ins and outs of those 4, and feel like we do it pretty well.
So now tell me, how much frittle are you making in a holiday season?
I'll just say millions of pieces. Yeah.
Really?
Literally, boxes.
Yeah. Literally millions of pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done the math, and yeah, we've done millions of pieces. So right now we're working on, it's what I would consider a large order, but a online, these subscription services, these like treat companies. Somebody ordered from us for their December subscription box about 1,200 slightly smaller amounts than Frittle Box. And if you know the Frittle Box, it has a very specific size. It was exactly 1/2 inch too tall. So they helped us together. We just developed new packaging. And I think it's going to be a winner, even at the events here in Indianapolis. And so it's a slightly less amount of Frittle, and put a really cute design sticker on it. And that's what's going to end up in these treat boxes, 1,200 of them.
That's a lot of treat boxes.
Is
your December usually like this?
You know, this is, again, the third December, so it just changes. I mean, we continue to make more candy each year. We need more seasonal help each year. So I think we'll definitely continue on that path.
We'll be back with more from Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections later in the show, when we'll hear a little more about Christmas time in a candy kitchen. Here at Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are all about local restaurants, and we try our best to keep up with the seasonal changes and cool new menu items. So when Rook in Fletcher Place launched a Filipino street food-inspired menu and a lineup of ramen dishes recently, it was time to stop in and talk with restaurateur Ed Rudisill and executive chef Carlos Salazar about the new menu.
Since we opened, you know, we've talked about doing a Filipino-heavy menu or adding a lot more Filipino items on, but, you know, again, not seeing ourselves as a Filipino restaurant, things like that, and being able to Carlos to be able to present flavors that maybe not traditionally served in the Philippines, or flavors and like inspiration from other parts of Asia. We really wanted to do it, but we held ourselves back for what, a good year probably.
Yeah.
And we both said that, I think he first said it and I echoed it, that like when we rolled out the first menu that had a lot of Filipino dishes on it, we're like, if this menu fails, we're going to be devastated, because this is the one that we really, really wanted to work. Like, because it's the food that we're curious about, we're interested in. It didn't take but a week probably before everybody was just kind of like flooding in to come check it out. You know, even some of our like, I don't necessarily want to say demographics, but we started pulling in a different clientele, like that were all of a sudden that were accustomed to eating Filipino cuisine or Filipino people coming in, and you know, he's got a different twist on it. He's got a fine dining background, And so, you know, as he said, you know, the street food anywhere you go isn't pretty. It's, you know, it's fast, it's easy, it's on the streets, it's, you know, they got a little booth and they're making one item. But having a guy like Carlos putting this together, I mean, the plates look amazingly beautiful and the flavors are spot on.
So, tell me about the new menu.
Well, new menu is not as good and cold outside. I kind of went ramen heavy. I guess, I don't know if it's heavy, but I got 5 different kinds of ramen in there. So I went 2 vegetarians, which is a red curry. The other one is a mushroom base. And then I went with a chicken base. Almost, it's a Filipino dish, but I just, it's literally the flavor is chicken and onions. And then I had tonkatsu, which is pork bones, chicken bones with lots of fat, and boiled the crap out of it until it's creamy. And then the pho, which I went totally not tradition. People might be mad at me, whatever, but it's a ramen. It's ramen. It's pho, but the broth is pho, but everything else is ramen. So,
why ramen? Why now? I mean, I know you usually have some on the menu, but why expand the menu?
I've always wanted to do it. I didn't know if people were ready for it. I didn't know if it was... I hear a lot of people talk about it, but I've had ramens on there and no one orders it. You know, so I just like, well, people are talking, but they're not backing it up. So really, I'm testing the grounds. I put 5. I think it's safe. And I think for my space back there, that's really all I can do. And it's cold. I mean, it's perfect time for it.
So now describe them a little bit more for people who might not be familiar with it. You know, we do hear a lot about ramen, but I'm wondering maybe if people have tried it. So what's it like?
It's really, really good broth with really nice noodles. Now, well, it's a Japanese dish. I mean, they eat it for breakfast, lunch, dinner. And, I mean, it's noodles and broth. I mean, what we grew up eating was the 25-cent ramen. So it's that, but 50 times better.
See, that's what I was thinking, is that people are thinking of the packs in the grocery stores, you know.
We're actually using real bones, real meat, real vegetables, water, you know, and fresh noodles come from Japan, and we're actually taking 5, 6, 24 hours making the broth instead of a minute, you know, and putting it's powder packets.
Right,
know?
So there's no packets of flavoring going on. Yeah. This is not the kind of ramen we're talking about.
Yeah. The people here would probably like it too because it kind of reminds me of chicken noodle soup. So, I mean, even my cooks back there, Shelva and Pete, they're like, this is like eating chicken noodles, and I think it's going to be a big hit. And plus, instead of just regular braised chicken, I'm putting fried chicken on there. So it's just a different take. You know.
I think that's great. So I think that gives people a little idea of you know, a little bit of common ground, you know, from that they can, you know, can kind of approach it from.
Yeah.
You know, anything else you know that people might not expect from the new menu?
Well, half of it, I want to say half. I got the 5 ramen, and then I got the other half, almost like Filipino menu, where I want to focus on, you know, because I think people are loving it. I mean, it blew up once I started putting Filipino menu items on the menu, and people are taking it. You know, it's not what I expected.
Well, how come? Why do you think that is?
Because no one talks about it. I don't think there's no Filipino restaurants, and you might go to Chicago or whatever, New York, they'll have it, but Indy, not really. And Filipino food is not pretty. You know, it's really not pretty. It's fried fish, fried pork, rice. But it takes creativity to make it pretty for people to approach it a little bit better than this looks like, you know, rice and meat on my plate. So,
So when you talk about Filipino street food, you know, what kind of items are you talking about? Because, you know, our idea of street food is probably different from another person's idea of street food. So what do you mean by that?
Street foods in the Philippines, traditionally it's a lot of meat on a stick, a lot of like fried whole baby chickens, you know, like fried fish, dried shrimp, things like that. Like, and meat on the stick, I'm talking about they're using intestines, they're using pig ears, they're using every part of the meat or the beef, the pig, the fish, whatever, and they're skewering it and grilling it, and you eat it. But here, I mean, I'm kind of taking the approach of people not being too scared. I've served pigtails, you know. I've served just different, the whole fish, you know, things like that where, I don't know, it's just, like I said, people have taken it a lot better than I expected.
So they're open to trying stuff like that?
They are, and I'm really happy because when I was talking with Ed, what, 3-4 years ago, it's like, Indy's not ready for it. And then when we got together, it was like, it's almost like perfect timing. It was like, it was getting to that point 2 years later, 3 years later. All right, Indy's ready for it. Let's see what, you know, what you got and what they can take.
We've been talking with Ed Rudisill and Carlos Salazar of Rook in Indianapolis. For more information on the ramen and the street food inspired menu, go to rookindy.com. I'm a big fan of social media, and here at Eat Drink Indiana Radio, I mention a lot about finding more information on Facebook or Twitter. Social media sites like those two have definitely affected the restaurant business in recent years, but I'm not talking just about snarky Yelp reviews or Instagrams of tonight's dinner. For local restaurateur Ed Rudisill, who's an owner at Black Market, Siam Square, Thunderbird, and Rook in Indianapolis, social media has offered a way to connect with all sorts of people in the food business, like blogger Wendy Tin of Upstart Kitchen and pickling expert Michaela Hayes of Crock and Jar. After talking ramen recently, I talked with Ed about connections he's made through social media.
Well, I think I'm relatively outgoing, depending on my day. You know, sometimes I can't say relatively. I know I'm very outgoing. But, you know, whenever I go out of town, I try to, like, locate usually, like, one good place to as a jumping-off point. And then if I really love the place, I'll ask the bartenders and servers where else do I need to go in town. But almost always in this day of, like, social media, we'll trade either Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and then I try to stay in contact with everybody because it's fun, and it's interesting, and it makes a revisit to those places really interesting. You know, we were talking earlier about the ramen. You know, I ate at a wonderful ramen joint in D.C. in the spring. It was kind of a last-minute trip. We went there for the cherry blossoms, you know, around the National Mall. I wanted to eat. A lady I know named Wendy Tin, that writes the Upstart Kitchen blog. She's amazing. She's a great writer. I think she's a lawyer for the Justice Department or something. She has some, like, totally non-food related job. But she had sent me an email and said, "Hey, I saw you're going to be in D.C. We should link up." I'm like, "Okay, great. Let's do that." And then we found out that she wasn't in town for, like, 2 more days. It was a quick trip for us. But she gave me a list of places, and so we hit Daikaya, which they were doing a very different style of ramen, like a Sapporo style. Yeah, I mean, anytime I go into any city, anytime I get chatting with somebody, like, I try to maintain that connection because it's fun and, you know, you've got different perspectives in the industry from depending on what their job function is or what city they're in, and just because every city is so different in the way that the restaurant industry runs. And so, I mean, you know, lately I've been really obsessed with Seattle. But my wife always teases me, like, because everywhere I go,
right,
like, I still stay in contact with literally the very first person I met in Sicily. When we ate at a dinner, we had been in town for 3 hours, went to dinner. The somm at the restaurant was wonderful. She and I got along really well. We still stay in contact. She has since moved to Paris. And so she kind of fills me in on what's going on in Paris and, you know, things like that. But no, we still probably talk on a monthly basis, maybe once a month or so.
Well, now tell me about Michaela Hayes and how you connected with her and got her to Indianapolis for a workshop.
The first time I read about her was in the New York Times when there was an article about Gramercy Tavern and Mike Anthony creating the pickling station for her. And then gave her, I think she had 4 or 5 staff members underneath her, and that's all they did was, like, fermentation, pickling, all that. That was how I got led to her blog. When we were opening Black Market, there was things that we wanted to do. We knew that the pickling program was going to be pretty serious, and at that time I was really interested I had found her blog, and I was really interested in nukazuke pickling, which is kind of pickling vegetables in rice bran, using that as the medium. So you kind of bury everything in this. It feels like sand. You know, you just kind of bury it, and you create this, like, yeast culture inside, and then pack everything in and just let it ferment. She had a post about it, but it was very brief. And I said, I need to know this lady. Like, what she's doing is amazing. There's only a handful of places that were operating at that level as far as, like, the fermentation level. And, I mean, I reached out to the Culture Pickle Shop as well in Berkeley. I never really heard anything back from them, but Michaela, I left a post or a comment on one of her posts saying I would love to get in contact with Michaela. And she responded via email and, you know, asked what kind of questions I had, and I told her. And then we just kind of started a conversation going back and forth, like, oh, we're, you know, Micah, Frank, and I are opening a new restaurant in Indianapolis, and, you know, we're really interested in some of these techniques. And we just always had it out there, like, you know, she's just super nice. I believe you met her, right? And so, you know, she was always asking, like, how's it going? How's the build-out going? Whatever. And we just always, again, we would talk about once a month or email back and forth. And after about a year of Black Market being open, we just kind of said, one of these days we should do, an event together, you know?
So these connections that you make through the internet and things you read and different blogs or articles in the paper, it really, you know, it continues to have an effect, you know, on what you're doing here.
Well, I think that the food community is very, well, it's very tight anyway. I mean, it may seem like, how could you possibly know everybody, because there's just, you know, millions of restaurants across the country. But it really is kind of a small community, and everybody, it's the 6 degrees of separation. Somebody knows somebody that knows somebody. And everybody is pretty welcoming. You know, I just can't imagine 30 years ago, like, you know, here's a perfect example. So when we were developing our sour sausage recipe, I am familiar with the way that they make it in northern Thailand. But in northern Thailand, you would take, you know, sausages filled with raw pork, and you would, like, and your ingredients, and you would stuff the sausages and leave them outside for, like, 4 days to ferment. Obviously, we can't do that in the United States. I mean, the health department regulates. I mean, it's just unfathomable. You couldn't do it. But I know of restaurants that have done that, so I reached out to some people that I had been networked with, and some not even so, like, unsolicited email kind of thing. Like, I sent a message over to Andy Ricker at Pock Pock, and I said, I know you serve this on your menu. How do you do it? You know, how do you get around these things? And, like, he responded back to me immediately, and you just couldn't have done that 30 years ago. You would have to, like, handwrite a note, send it off. Maybe in 3 or 4 months you might have gotten a response back. Maybe not. You know, I talked to a couple of the cooks at Next in Chicago, because their second menu that did it Next was a Thai menu. And Chef Dave Barron had sent out some nem sausage and nem prik for us to try. And so I knew that they had done it before as well. And again, through some mutual connections, I know a couple of guys that had worked there. So we actually got the Next recipe. They sent us the recipe of how they did their sausage. Now, we did end up, like, using more in line with the way that, at least ingredient-wise and preparation-wise, with the people that work on our team, you know, from Siam Square that are from that area, employing that, but also on that other side, like, the more modern preparations as far as not hanging it outside, you know, to cure. But, you know, those things work. And so being able to reach out to a network like that, you just couldn't have done that prior to social media.
We've been talking with restaurateur Ed Rudisill. You can check out his blog, View from the Middle, at edrudisill.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from the best chocolate in town, purveyors of handmade chocolates and unique desserts located on Mass Ave. This has been a terrific year for new restaurants in Indianapolis, and the latest, Spoke and Steel, just opened a couple of days ago in what was formerly the Canterbury Hotel at 123 South Illinois Street. After an extensive renovation, a new hotel, Le Meridian, has taken its place, but the focus of the location isn't the hotel. Spoke and Steel General Manager Nick Clark told me that it's not a hotel restaurant, but rather a restaurant that just happens to have a hotel attached. I stopped in to check out the new space before it opened to talk with Nick and with Spoke and Steel Executive Chef Tyson Peterson as well.
Things have changed. Before it was a 38-seat restaurant, and it was more on the side of fine dining. Mm-hmm. Fine dining for us really doesn't make a whole lot of sense when we're sitting next to St. Elmo's and so many other notable places that we felt we had to change that. And what's most important to us and what I think we've accomplished very well is that this is not a hotel restaurant. We want that to be made clear, is that if it was up to us, we wouldn't even have a La Meridian sign on the building. Not that we don't like that brand. It's incredible. Right. But what we want is this building to be known as a destination restaurant that happens to have 100 great rooms on top.
Spoke and Steel General Manager Nick Clark.
So the goal here is that as you entered in the Canterbury previously, there was a small restaurant off to your left. Now when you enter in, we want it to feel like you're entering into a restaurant. So this is now 160 seats for the restaurant. Front desk is a bit of a discovery process. You got to go back and to the left to get to it, but hostess will certainly be able to direct you. Mm-hmm. So when you come in to walk the space, we wanted to make sure that it was a great, comfortable neighborhood style restaurant. It's not an expense account restaurant. It's just a really great restaurant.
Okay.
You know, chef's going to have a very approachable menu. Mm-hmm. As people learn to trust him more, he'll push the boundaries and introduce people more. We're very lucky. We stole him from one of the top Jean-Georges restaurants in the country. We're very pleased to have him. So when you enter to the right, there's going to be a highly activated bar right when you come in. Main bar, 10 draft lines. We're doing what we hope is going to be just take everybody by storm. Right when you walk in, there's an amazing drink case. So we're going to do a custom cocktail program where you purchase it for, let's say, $75 a month. And every month, we'll go out and source a really unique spirit from around the country. Could be a potato vodka from Idaho, something really neat. And we'll make you a cocktail that's going to get you about five pours, but it's going to be an old apothecary-looking bottle with your name etched in it, in glass. So right when you come in, we want this to be a little bit of a seen and be seen style restaurant. We've got a great location on Illinois, so that's going to help that personalized experience.
Now, are those the bespoke cocktails that, that the press releases
that's
talk
correct.
About, you know, that I'm not sure anybody really knows what that means?
Well,
you
I
know?
Think for a lot of it, it's doing things kind of back in the Gatsby era, kind of the Prohibition era, where we're not doing rum and Cokes or those kind of things. You know, you're not going to find Jack Daniels behind our bar.
Not at all.
You know, we're teetering back and forth on it because we are right in downtown. So we've got convention guests.
Right.
We've got kind of
sports.
We've got the Jersey crowd we got to contend with. So we may have it on request only. But no, we certainly, our goal is to be able, if someone were to ask for Jack Daniels, to say, you know what, I've got that. But I've also got this really amazing whiskey that was distilled 2 hours away in Lawrenceburg.
Right.
That's kind of the goal here. So when you come into the right, this is traditional dining. So this is going to be your four tops, your two tops. This is where you want to sit down and have a meal. So this area is what we hope is going to be a real highlight for the restaurant. We've got a custom charcuterie case that's going to be installed in here.
Okay.
So this is where you're going to see a chef preparing, you know, really great cured meats, cheeses. I'd love to see one on every other table in here. So that's the goal, is to really push this. It's great to have someone out here. You know, in a perfect world, we would have done an expo kitchen where we could have really shown off what we're doing.
Right.
Didn't make sense with our design, but this is another way that we can kind of integrate people. So our goal was to completely divorce the hotel and the restaurant. We wanted to do as much as we could to bifurcate these two spaces.
Okay.
So we put up these walls here so you can't get to the server side of things. This will all be closed off. So if you're a hotel guest, you'll check in, go straight to the elevator.
Okay, so this is would be check-in area.
This would be check-in, correct.
All right.
So a small space, we didn't want it to be much.
Right.
Again, it really is all about the restaurant here. We wanted to make it something that during the day, we're hoping to be a great breakfast and lunch spot. It seems like downtown is really lacking those two meal periods in a unique sense. There's certainly a lot of chain restaurants, but for breakfast, we'd like to do something a little different. So.
Okay.
We're excited about that. So this space is great for a traveler coming in. If you want to grab a cup of coffee, have a little breakfast, there's plenty of charging stations throughout for people to be doing
nice.
Computers, making phone calls. one of the things that could set us apart on breakfast is that right when you walk in, part of the bar, we're going to have a traditional Italian espresso machine, kind of a three-group machine, nothing automatic, and it's by Ely Cafe, so no Starbucks or anything like that, which I think is going to, nothing against Starbucks. So we want to make sure we do something different, and I think between Ely Cafe and then having Chef doing the pastry program in-house, that's going to be a big thing.
Oh, very nice. Well, tell me a little bit about that, because that's a bit unusual, you know, and I'm always asking about pastry and whether things are made in-house, and very often they're not.
Sure. You know, we want to raise the standard a little bit. Anything that we can put our hands on and have creative control over is kind of what we're trying to do. The whole craft mentality is huge for us.
Tyson Peterson, executive chef at Spoke & Steel.
So if there's anything that I can create with my own two hands, including myself or my team. And that's another thing real quick. It's not really about me. I'm trying to create a good structure here, pass it along and create a team. So, you know, I want to do canning program. I want to do in-house charcuterie. I want to, you know, age our own cheeses eventually down the road. So anything, including the pastry program, we do want to definitely grab a hold of that where we can.
What's the menu, the regular menu, going to be like?
Yeah, once again, my focus is family. I come from a big family. Approachable is a key word in my mind. So it's going to be a lot of traditional American fare that's kind of elevated, or even progressive American fare. There's a lot of people in the town that are afraid of the beautiful products that they have locally, and I want to showcase those local ingredients as well. I want to be a part of the community, so if I can go to a farmer's market and I can pick up all the blueberries or cherries and bring them in-house and use them in my cuisine, that's what I'm going to do.
We've been talking with Nick Clark and Tyson Peterson of the new Spoke & Steel restaurant in downtown Indianapolis. For more information on the restaurant, look for it on Facebook. Well, everyone is busy during the holidays, but that's especially true for the folks who make all the treats that we like to give as gifts, or maybe save for ourselves. Local candy maker Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections is busy in her downtown Indy production kitchen making literally millions of pieces of her signature Friddle candy. I stopped in at the production kitchen recently to get a little peek into what it takes to make all that candy by hand. So now tell me what you're looking at and what you're doing right now.
So it's still a handcraft operation, no machinery, but what we have is part of the candy cooking on the stovetop. And we have it in a rotation where we get one pot going and we use candy thermometers. And when it reaches a certain temperature, the second one goes off. And so it's still one person and two pots in thousands of boxes. So truly, when one pot is done, we process it, cut it, move it along, and then typically just a couple minutes later, the next one is going on. So there's no, you know, you don't just like stop to, I don't know.
You don't just stop to talk, right? Yeah. So you are working while we're talking, and we're watching things boil on the stove right now.
Yeah, I was trying to find a kind way of saying that. But yeah, we're not stopping. You're very flexible. We're just getting right into the middle of it.
So tell me what is going on in your Santa's workshop of a candy kitchen.
Yeah. Well, across the table from me, so the design of our kitchen is we've got two work tables in the middle, and Jana is, I guess, what you would call processing Friddle. We're letting it cool. We even have a rotation on the cooling rack of which candy needs to be processed next, which means completely cooled but in a airtight container as soon as possible. So that's interesting. She's rotating and working on that. And then Fern is also in the kitchen, and she is madly labeling these bags. And we just learn new things along the way. So we've got Fern, Jana, and also in the workshop, we've got a couple of work tables in kind of the main space, not in the kitchen. And we've got two gals, Heather and Linda, doing the exact same job, which is weighing and bagging and sealing Friddle. Because still, handcraft. Yeah.
So all of the candy is made by hand, processed and packaged by hand. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. These are the bags And even though I don't think they're as detailed as the signature Frittle box, we still take off each label, still put them in the bag, fill them, seal the bag. So I'd say the bag still ends up getting touched 5 or 6 times. The Frittle box, I think we sat down and thought that one through, and maybe 9 times.
That people are having to be processing it, so they're having to be involved in it nine different steps. Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of people in the industry, too, they'll ask where we have our Frittle boxes printed, and because on top we've got Frittle, a little sweet peanut treat, and on the side it has the Indiana Artisan stamp, and those actually both get stamped on. So it's stamp, sticker, fold, weigh the candy bag, seal it, put it in the box, seal the box, and then actually apply a seal.
So you start out with actually stamping the logo onto the boxes? I mean, that's from start to finish, absolutely.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Wow. So, but now Frittle isn't the only candy that you do, right? So tell me what the other ones are.
Yep, we do the Southern Pralines. That was our second candy. Sweet and spicy pecans that have been the same recipe from the beginning. And then the new seasonal item that we brought on, they are pink peppermint meringues dipped in dark chocolate. And the group has decided, we just tried for a custom order. It was chocolate chip meringues like Grandma used to make. And we decided we would just carry those year-round. They were so good. And
okay, now tell me what you're doing next.
Yep, I am adding the peanut butter to the candy that we just made, and I guess everything is kind of a method. A lot of people say, well, okay, I'll answer your question. I'm adding it to the candy, and I'm going to stir it. So it is kind of methodical because everything is super hot, so I don't want to overstir it. I'll make it even hotter. I don't want to hurt myself. That's also part of it. And even though I'm moving slowly in my mind, I got to move it quickly. Then we clear the pot, and because candy is so hot, I think about the whole process, even through just being efficient. So I scrape the pot, but at the same time, I kind of want to get out as much as I can from a waste standpoint. And because it's candy, which is hotter than boiling, it takes a long time to even clean the pots. And this isn't the kind of recipe where, like in pralines, we can just keep refilling the pots, because it's okay to get your praline in your praline. But we can't really, we always have to start with a very clean, oil-free pot for the next batch. So by scraping it and getting everything out right now, before it sets up, then it decreases the cleaning time on the pot.
So now comes the time when you're spreading the candy around, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm just incorporating it more, without giving too much of the methods away. I'm just incorporating more. So I sort of only half stir it because it's now getting stirred more on the cooking surface. And I think when you do this, I guess 1,000 times over, you sort of know what to look for. And we've figured out different points of failure and why. We just try to avoid those.
So you look for color and texture and that sort of thing. As you spread the candy out on in the workshop,
yeah,
and make the magic happen.
That's right, make the magic happen. Yep.
We've been talking with Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections in Indianapolis. Her candies are available in local specialty shops and at newfangledconfections.com. Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is made possible through support from Glazers, marketers of fine wines and spirits. Well, as I mentioned earlier in today's show, I want to offer a few more food-related gift ideas right up until Christmas. So, in addition to hearing about the candy from Newfangled Confections today, I also wanted to check out some engravable gift items from Naptown Etching's personal and custom line of gifts. I stopped in at the studio recently where Ashley Walden told me about the personalized gifts she can make out of such kitchen items as cutting boards, pie plates, and rolling pins.
Steph, here, you do all the etching right here?
Yeah, there are three of us that work here. I kind of like it. It's kind of cool. We're all three chicks. We're all the exact same age. We love it. We love working together. We create glass, acrylic, wood, leather. We personalize them. So, and as well, right now we're doing metal, full color metal as well. But for the Christmas items, we found a lot of big things are the etched glassware, custom glassware that you can give. So, for instance, a pie dish with your name on it, then you can take it to an event, still has your name, you get it back, people see it's yours, and right. It's personal.
Or a present.
Exactly. Exactly, a perfect present. We also have the etched cutting boards. Really fun. Why don't you put mom's favorite recipe on there, right?
Okay, you could do that. You could do a whole recipe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We could take, your family recipe that you have for chocolate chip cookies, put it on there and you can pass it down to people, put it on the cutting board, and it's personal. It's yours. We even have full color ones, cutting boards where you can put a picture. There's one that I have. I put my grandparents' farm on, a beautiful cutting board for the family. So, yeah, there's tons of full-color stuff we can do with that as well. Etched glassware, wooden utensils as well.
Oh, like rolling pins and things?
Rolling pins are perfect. Who wouldn't love a rolling pin that says, mom's kitchen to display on top of the stove? Or even one with a design in it that you can roll into the dough.
Okay, now that's what I was wondering about, is if you could actually roll something into the dough.
Yes, as long as you have a good dough and you're a great baker. I might not be able to, but you could, not me. But yeah, we can set a custom design. I have one with a squirrel in it. Someone ordered one with squirrels. So it puts a squirrel design as you roll into the dough. It's really cool.
Could you do like words that would have to be backwards so that they would show up then on your dough?
Absolutely, yes. And I have an example over here.
Oh, do you? Oh,
yeah. So come on over here. Yeah. I'll show you. So made with love in reverse here. And then when you put it out, it's correct.
Now, tell me a little bit about the wood. It's bamboo, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We can use all sorts of different wood. For specifically the cutting boards, we use a lot of the eco-friendly bamboo wood. However, even if someone had an old cutting board at home that they really were in love with and they wanted to personalize a wood cutting board, if they got a hold of us, we could work with them to personalize the cutting board they already have if it's wood. We do etch into all different types of wood. So it's something that we can even work with your own memories that you already have.
Now it's not really, it's not etched really deeply. I was wondering, if they'd be hard to keep clean.
They're not very hard to keep clean. As you can see right here on this one, it is just a low profile. And then just like anything else, you don't want to throw wood in the dishwasher, right. Overheat it. But you can just hand wash them. I had one for the longest time and used it, and I accidentally lost it in a move. But they do work. They work well, and they're totally functional.
Right, and so I can imagine that would be kind of cool, like presents. Mm-hmm. You take a cheese board, to somebody or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
A kind of a fun one that we can do, we can put together a gift set, if you will, an etched cutting board and then an etched bottle of olive oil. Yes. And that is, your face
right,
lit up.
Right.
How great is that? Who doesn't love some olive oil and bread or cheese or whatnot? So we could do an etched bottle of oil. One of my favorite sayings is food and wine are medicine for the well.
Nice.
And putting something like that on a cutting board with your bottle of etched olive oil with it, that makes a great gift for, a neighbor, even in the corporate world, someone you don't know
sure.
too well.
Oh, yeah. So I'm imagining all sorts of things now that
you're here and you see
now
it.
I'm thinking
so much
of it.
Fun.
Yeah. Now, is it really expensive?
No. We'll be able to work a custom cutting board for under $30, including full customization and personalization. Included in that cost, you get a designer, someone who's going to work with you and create exactly what you want, the specific look, the specific font, and make sure you're getting your best product.
So I'm not like trying to draw it myself.
No, exactly. You may draw it out on a napkin and shoot us a photo, and then we take it from there and help you out. Your rolling pins, depending on what is etched on them, you're going to get a different price range anywhere from $30 to $60, which you can find online for the same price all over the world. Here, however, you get to kind of put your own spin on it and make it more local, more custom. And we can do the wraparound design or just a straight-on design that might be more of a showpiece to sit in the kitchen.
Right. Now, what about the growlers?
Okay, we do etched growlers, and the growlers range from 25 and up, depending if they're etched or hand-painted. We do hand-paint in growlers, and we can hand-paint glass, similar to this look, but just on a growler. So those are 25 to 30. A lot of times we also will do a pint glass that matches, make a little gift set. So we've been offering those out, and we can do all sorts of glassware as well. If you're looking for something more economical, to give out, but still want a custom gift, we can do pint glasses, wine glasses, and we don't have a minimum order.
Okay, now that was another question.
Yes. Right? Yes. So let's say you just need three wine glasses for your three best girlfriends. Go ahead and give us a call. We can set them up and set them each custom for you and do three specific wine glasses, totally different. There's no minimums. We will work with you on that.
We've been talking with Ashley Walden of Naptown Etching's personal and custom gift line. For more information, check out personalandcustom.com. Well, we all know that our calendars are filling up with holiday plans, but there are a lot of food-related events that are coming up as well. There's daily holiday dining in the Ellis Ayres Tea Room at the Indiana State Museum, for example, from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. through December 31st. Call 317-232-1637 for information or go to indianamuseum.org. You can get the Grape to Glass Winery Tour every Saturday and Sunday at Easley Winery at 205 College Avenue in Indianapolis. Tours run 12 to 5 on Saturday and 12 to 3 on Sundays. Call 317-636-4516 for info or go to easleywinery.com. There are free tastings every Tuesday at the Mass Ave Wine Shop from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The shop is located at 878 Massachusetts Avenue. For information, call 317-972-7966 or go to massavewine.com. On Wednesday, December 10th, check out the Cognac Tasting event at 5:30 p.m. at Vine and Table in Carmel, and a holiday whiskey tasting at 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, December the 11th. For information and to register for the events, go to eatdrinkevolve.com. And on Thursday, December the 11th, Crown Liquors Downtown is also hosting a whiskey tasting, and I stopped in to talk with Brennan Corder about the popular fourth annual event.
So essentially what it's going to be, we're going to have over 100 whiskeys that are going to be featured at our downtown store from 6 until 8 on Thursday the 11th of December. And we're going to have 14 different tables. We'll have over 100 different whiskeys that will be open. And so essentially you'll have a lot of the major producers, Buffalo Trace, Jim Beam. You're going to see smaller producers like Dry Fly out of Washington State. We're going to have other new producers that have never been tasted before, which is going to be pretty intriguing. So I'm really looking forward to this whole event.
Now, is there a cost for the event?
Absolutely not. Being an off-premise retailer, we're not allowed to charge, and it's totally open and free to the public.
So now when we come in, we'll get some tickets. But then how do you decide what to try?
I think essentially you can kind of target some things that you may have seen before but have never had the opportunity to try, or you could certainly speak with one of our staff members and we can give you some information from there, or you could just go and visit each sales representative from table to table and maybe work on a couple of things that seem interesting, get a little bit of feedback, and then go back and revisit.
So what are some of the categories of whiskeys that I might want to explore at a tasting like this?
So obviously, it's a very large-scale bourbon event. So bourbon will be the primary types of whiskeys that will be available, but there's also new and smaller distilleries. Like we just talked about, Dry Fly out of Washington State has some really cool stuff. They've got a weeded whiskey that's going to be finished in port barrels, which is kind of interesting. I also would highly recommend some of the new rye offerings that have come out over the years. So we've got some really cool stuff.
What's a tasting like this like? I imagine it's a little crowded. Absolutely. So what can people expect when they come into the store?
I think it depends on when you arrive, because it's only a two-hour event. The sooner that you get here, the less crowded it'll be. And I would say within the last half an hour to a 45-minute range, it'll be at maximum capacity. So if you want to get in and out, I would come early. If you enjoy crowds, you know, and like milling around and hobnobbing with, you know, colleagues or friends or industry folk, stay and hang out for the entire event.
So if someone's maybe new to exploring whiskeys or haven't been to a whiskey tasting, they won't feel like they, you know, shouldn't be there. They don't know enough to come.
I would say it's most important for those that are novice. Folks that don't have a truly deep understanding of the different whiskeys that are available. And obviously this is primarily focusing on American whiskeys. So we're not going to be talking about Scotch, not going to be talking about Canadian whiskeys or whiskeys from around the globe. It's really what's happening here in America. So if you don't have an understanding of what's going on, this is a marvelous opportunity to come out and learn more.
Oh, that's great. So, I could, you know, you could kind of target some small producers or maybe some of the major ones we might be more familiar with and maybe contrast a little bit.
Absolutely, without question. And I think you can talk to some of the representatives and they can talk about different processes that they're implementing within the distillery and then in the barrel aging rooms in order to create different flavor and aromatic profiles.
So now tell me exactly where it is, you know, where the store is located and the time and that sort of thing.
Excellent. So we're going to be at Crown Liquors at the corner of Ohio and Delaware. The actual address is 150 North Delaware. The event is on Thursday, December 11th from 6 until 8 p.m. Each attendee will receive 7 tickets, which will give them an opportunity to sample 7 different offerings with a half-ounce sample of each.
You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Before we close our program today, I want to remind you to enter the WFYI and EatDrinkIndy.com cookie contest. Just email your favorite holiday cookie recipe to JoleneKetzenberger@gmail.com. And I'd also like to thank our guests today, Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections, Carlos Salazar and Ed Rudisill of Rook, Ashley Walden of Naptown Etchings Personal and Custom, Nick Clark and Tyson Peterson of Spoke and Steel, and Brennan Corder of Crown Liquors. And thanks to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.